And of course, we've got Linda Moulton Howe, and we're going to take your phone calls and questions with her in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, by the way, for just 25 cents a day, you can become a Coast Insider, a Streamlink member. Simply go to coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast, Linda Moulton Howe. Linda, let me ask you this before we go to questions. Mm-hmm. Anything new with crop formations? In that, my theory is that this planet's alive, and that might be another vehicle for some kind of communication from something out there. And with everything that's happening on this planet, I'm wondering if we're getting a lot more crop formations.
Well, I got the most interesting email and phone call from Serena Wright Taylor, that you know,
yes,
from the Los Angeles conference in February each year. And she has been in England. She has family there and goes each summer. And she sent me a very interesting email. The first one was about the fact that the farmers have gotten together with what they are calling a farm watch scheme in 2011. And that the local businesses, hotels, restaurants, and pubs are all trying to, with the farmers, to report any suspicious person or any intrusions into farmland and getting the police. So this is a crackdown summer, and there have been two or three formations that probably somebody made, probably for commercial reasons. But the phenomena that we know and recognize for the last 20-some years that is always breathtaking when you actually see it has long been associated with mysterious lights. In fact, my fourth book, Mysterious Lights and Crop Circles, that is the subject because of this constant link. Well, Serena's second email to me yesterday was, several luminous balls of light were seen flying rapidly over the East Kennet crop circle, which is something new. They showed up in a video from an airplane. They could only be seen when slowing down the video. Now, somebody is trying to get me the video to see, but I was especially intrigued that if the mysterious lights start showing up again, no matter what the farmers are trying to do to crack down on anybody getting into their fields, this could be a fascinating summer in England about sort of a standoff between the phenomena and the lights in the creation of the phenomenal crop formations with the so-called hoaxing group, perhaps squelched. So that is fresh news from Serena Wright Taylor, who will be back from England, I think, in a few more days. But I think this is very interesting. There have been, this year, you probably remember that there were two outstanding formations in Indonesia, right? And those were the very first in 2011. And there has been a pattern in Madisonville, Tennessee, that investigators such as Jeff Wilson and Roger Sugden in the Independent Crop Circle Research Association, they think that some teenagers tried to copy the unusual pattern that was there two or three years ago. But so far, I don't know that anything's been proved. It is just another example in the United States of confusion around a crop formation in an area where there are lots of mounds and Indian burial sites, and that's another one of the common denominators that we have seen in the United States and Canada, that when there have been spectacular formations here, it is often in places where there have been ancient mounds, ancient civilizations. So I would say to people listening, keep watching the crop circle. If it's earthfiles.com, I try to report any news. Crop Circle Connector in England is a constant fount of information around the world on what is happening with crop formations. And your question, could it be communication? Remember that I have talked about a man who told me a long time ago that an agency in the United States was convinced that the crop formation phenomena was related to time travelers interacting with our planet. So it's another time travel theme.
Okay, very good. Let's go to the phones. You ready?
Yeah.
We'll go to Bob in Tacoma, Washington, west of the Rockies. Welcome to the program, Bob. You're on with Linda.
I have a story suggestion for Linda.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm right here.
Linda, you really need to get a hold of serious UFO research in Hakan Ortagon in Turkey and do a report on the amazing series of UFO sightings between 2007 and 2009.
Mm-hmm.
The video has been posted over the internet, and the government of Turkey science department looked at the video and determined that it was authentic. And Roger Lear, it was not a hoax because Roger Lear was there the entire time and saw the entire thing. Do you know which case I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. I think that, well, I'm happy to look into it further and do a report if there's substance.
It's absolutely real. I mean, nobody's been able to debunk it, and it's an amazing non-human entity case. And if you really spend some time looking into it, you'll find out that it's absolutely real. And I really don't think Roger Lear would be the kind of person to make it up. And he saw it all unfold. He saw the entire.
Okay, very good. Thank you. That's how you get a lot of leads, Linda. Some of them work, some of them don't.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing Turkey up.
Andrew in Los Angeles, welcome to the program. Hey, Andrew.
Hi, sir. Great job you're doing. And Linda, you're a great reporter.
Thank you.
I have two brief questions. First of all, comments. I know somebody who is an abductee along with his wife. And from what I could tell, they suffer from like a post-traumatic stress disorder. And I believe it is directly resulting from what they went through having been abducted, and I have no doubt this gentleman is telling the truth. My question is, do you know if this couple suffered from any type of post-traumatic stress symptoms? And also, were there any features of their child, physical features that were somewhat different from ours? Because I believe this planet is being seeded, and We're being prepared for something really, really big that's mm-hmm. beyond maybe our understanding. And I'd like to get your comments on that. Thanks.
I think that every person that I've ever interviewed in the human abduction syndrome who seems to have had a conscious or unconscious face-to-face with something other than human, that they all have post-traumatic shock syndrome. The vast majority cannot sleep after those events without a light on in a room. That's part of a traumatic shock symptom. But when it comes to the question of agenda that we've all been struggling with for so long, I have in my own work, in my documentaries and in my books, in An Alien Harvest, I brought up the whole issue.
One of your classics, by the way.
Well, thank you. And I brought up in that first book that there is the issue of a genetic harvest in the animal mutilations that on the surface seem so repulsive and that people are terrified of them, when in fact the animal mutilations could be the flip side of the same coin, that the humans are on the other side but treated somewhat differently, and that there is a substantial reason for why there is a genetic harvest from this planet. Now, when you get into what all the genetic harvesting could be applied to, there's a wide range, and you are bringing up the issue of hybridization, a constant, ongoing, evolving genetic program of the standing up hominids on Earth. And I remember one man in the end of the 90s who had worked for an agency in the United States government without question, and there was a long context of a meeting, but he said to me, Linda, what I understand is that document that you were shown back in 1983 that said these extraterrestrial biological entities manipulated DNA in already evolving primates to create Homo sapien is just part of the genetic manipulation. And he went on to use a comparison. He said, starting with Homo erectus 1.6 million years ago or thereabouts, that would be like the first model of a Hoover vacuum cleaner. And he said there's been about 37 new models of Hoover vacuum cleaners, and Homo sapien is the latest model. And just like a vacuum cleaner serves our purposes, we are serving someone else's purpose. And I think that's what we are all struggling to understand. What really is the relationship of Homo sapien human to human? What is the relationship of Homo sapien to the Earth? And what is the relationship of the non-humans to the evolution of life here on this planet?
Speaking of vacuums, you ever see a vacuum salesman come into your house, Linda? They dump a whole bunch of junk on the on a carpet, and you go, gosh, I hope this thing works. Next up, we go to Sunny in Panama City, Florida. Welcome to the program, Sunny. Thanks for calling.
Hi, George, Linda. Thank you. And sure. Linda, thank you for continuing to cover the BP after effects, because
yeah.
I think the story's going to go on for a long time, and I don't think it's going to be pretty. I grew up there in Panama City and spent all of my life in the water and on the beach, and I did work on the BP cleanup last summer for about a month, the artist, between Destin and Panama City there. And basically, it was all very cosmetic, is all really they wanted us to do, pick up the tar balls, make it look busy for the tourists to answer questions. If anybody dug 3 inches in the sand and found oil veins and things like that, they were told to cover it up.
That's right.
And
I've heard that from more than one other person.
Yeah, and people working night crews have talked about trucks full of sand being coming in dumped. And we saw the C-130s flying over every day, as low as they could, spraying that stuff on everybody, you know, out over the water. But what I wanted to ask you was, your story on the fish is frightening, because one thing that did happen to a lot of people on that cleanup, including myself, is we all came down. We only worked for about 4 or 5 weeks on it, was with severe bacterial infections on us, staph infections,
wow.
MRSA. People were hospitalized every day and had to have them cut out and stuffed
wow.
with gauze. And it was terrible. And I suffered from it myself for about 8 months afterwards, and it still kind of comes back sometimes. And that has never occurred. You know, like I said, I've grown up there.
Right, and it sounds then, too, like the human immune systems were compromised, which is what the guess is in these fish, that the fish should not be succumbing to this bacteria that is in the Gulf and is common to the Gulf, and that usually when bacteria can take and get a foothold, like it has been in this at least 5 to 6 specimens of different fish or species of different fish, then it means that something is wrong with the immune systems, that they're not normal. They're not functioning normally. And I know that if you heard Coast to Coast about 2 months ago and went to Earth Files, I did an interview with both a woman who was living on Orange Beach in Alabama. There's an island community there. And with a Dr. Rodney Soto. He's in Florida.
Yes.
And the whole bottom line was that they had both been subject to basically political keep your mouths shut about human disease or problems with shellfish and fish in the Gulf. And we should not be living like that. We should be addressing what the truth is about the condition of the Gulf, accommodating ourselves to whatever that is, trying to fix it, making BP totally accountable, which I guess is part of the big problem now. Mm-hmm. There are efforts to bring litigation on behalf of the marine life that is being devastated against BP. And of course, BP does not want that to happen. They don't want to pay out any more money than they have to. And I learned from one of the people working in this science effort that BP has a whole warehouse of oil. The actual Macondo oil that has come up from the bottom, and they are not sharing it when scientists have asked for samples, because different hydrocarbons from different oil wells have different signatures, and they want to link what is happening to the fish and to the seafloor and to the humans. They would like to link it and have proof that would stand up in a court of law that the BP Macondo oil is the culprit in a lot of this. Without having those samples that BP is corralling and maintaining away from being investigated, they are, in fact, they're helping themselves. They're not helping the people of the Gulf.
No, not at all. Not at all. Linda, what do you see as our most pressing problem today? Earthquakes, tornadoes, volcanoes?
Overpopulation everywhere.
Yeah.
And the commerce money people look at expanding population as buying more product. I look at it as if we don't get population under control, that the no matter what is happening with climate change, if there's more drought, if there's more flooding, if there's more hurricanes, if there's more tornadoes, whatever is happening with the climate of the earth is going to happen. It's the fact that there are going to be whole, huge millions populations along rivers and on islands in which there's going to be perpetual flooding, and there will be perpetual requests to the world community for constant dollars and aid. The same with what's happening with violent weather. And the same is going to happen with drought. And if the projection right now for the southwestern United States holds forth, that the drought conditions this year that are really bad, by 5 years from now, it could be unbearable. And what does a country like the United States of America do if they don't have jobs in the Gulf because of the BP disaster? And that the drought of the Southwest is going to promote all kinds of wars and fights over water. And you can go around the planet and see these same issues. And if there was if population were not expanding at the rate that it is, there might be a way to deal with how to peacefully and healthfully move a population out of Tanzania into another country. But we've got political territories, we've got wars, and we've got a climate that is changing radically. And what are we going to do as the population keeps expanding into areas that are going to continually be devastated and the world doesn't have enough money to afford to keep putting everything back together?
Well, that's a good point. Linda, what's new with your Earth Files website?
Well, I've given you tonight some of the work I have been doing, mm-hmm. and I think that the unfolding in real X Files of the Boulder Longmont Blue Cerulean case is really important. For those who are already subscribers to the Earth Files and Real X Files, I know that you will find this compelling and riveting as it continues to unfold. And I am going to do a story upcoming on this fascinating new research that's come out of Purdue University that is linking neutrinos from our sun as the sun rotates, that they now have enough data that they are doing papers on a direct link between neutrinos on the sun affecting and slowing down the decay of isotopes in laboratories.
All right, stay with us. We're going to come back with final phone calls with Linda on Coast to Coast AM. Ian Punnett filling in for me on our Friday night Coast to Coast show, and I'll be back for you Monday night on Memorial Night for you with a special program, Who's Behind the Secret Door. Plus, the first hour, we'll talk about the USS Indianapolis, an incredible story as we pay homage to our fallen soldiers. When we come back with Linda Moulton Howe, let's take final phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, here we go. Let's go to Redondo Beach now in California. Alex, you're on with Linda.
Hi. Wow, this has been amazing and a sobering show tonight. Thank you both for the work you guys are doing.
You're very welcome.
Linda, I wanted to ask you about the recent fish die-offs here in Southern California. I mean, here in Redondo Beach, in the first week of March, less than a mile from where I live, there's millions of dead fish, right, sardines and anchovies,
right,
hundreds of tons in all that died in the harbor, Redondo. And then I wanted to ask if you had any additional information on this. Do you believe the reports that the fish suffocated from lack of oxygen in the water? And also the TV station KTLA News, the Channel 5, they reported that researchers discovered a neurotoxin in the fish. It was like independent samples taken from the scientists. But to this day, there still has been no official explanation why these fish all just died at once. And also, there was just another fish die up in Ventura on April 18th. So I wanted to ask you, really, what does this all mean? And are fish dies like this, are they natural in frequency? And really, what is this trying to tell us about the planet? What is the planet trying to tell us through all these fish dies? And I'll take my answer off there. Thank you, George. I love the show. Thank you.
All right.
Well, your summary is a very good one of what has happened in California with these massive, I had photos at earthfiles.com, and it looked like a silver sea because there were so many bodies all piled up on each other. And this happened twice within a short period of time. And like you, I question the first explanation, or let's say hypothesis, that it was an oxygen problem in the water. And I also read about the possibility that they had found some kind of neurotoxin evidence in some of the lab analyses, but like you, I still don't have any definitive answer. Look at the shark situation up in San Francisco Bay. Here, this has been going on, and they've been trying to get samples into labs, and they have done necropsies, and they have found that there was internal hemorrhaging and these lesions in the brain of the sharks, but they don't have a consensus on the cause of the death of all these sharks. And if you even jump back to January, December 31st, New Year's Eve, look what happened within about 2 weeks where there were massive deaths ranging from birds to crabs to oysters, penguins, all over the world in two hemispheres. And I remember thinking in that first week of January, there was something about the way this year started, that it has this feeling that it's just going to be one environmental crisis after another. And when you ask that bottom line question, what is happening on the planet that would be contributing to so much death? Whether you're talking about honeybees, whether you're talking about birds, leopard sharks, the fish in the Gulf, the shellfish, what is happening off the shores of Fukushima, with all of the marine life there and around the planet, you keep coming back. I think the story keeps coming back to a kind of unbridled expansion of human industry and pollution and chemistry that is upsetting everything, and that what's going to come out of all of this upset of a planet that is changing in its climate, that the chemistry of the water, the chemistry of the land, everything, the air, it has changed and is changing so much, and humans, I think, have contributed a lot to these changes. What comes out on the other side? You could look at the leopard shark and say something really turned its environment upside down that it's been living in so well for so long. And how many species, including humans, on this planet will the environment keep turning upside down, and how much of it comes right back to what humans are doing in both hemispheres around the world?
Any conferences coming up for you, Linda?
Yes, in a month, I'll be in Nashville with Whitley and Jim Mars and others to do the Dreamland Festival there, which is turning out to be a very fun conference to go to each year. And at the top of earthfiles.com, at my news website, at the very top, I have a list of where I am speaking for the rest of 2011. And from after Nashville, and each one of these has a click here for speakers and registration, hot link to each place. After Nashville, within a very short period of time, I'm leaving for Australia. And when I get back for a two-day turnaround to go to the MUFON conference in California, and I'm wondering if that might be a fun way in July, because I'm going to be traveling so much, that we might do with the speakers in Irvine at the MUFON conference like we did in Phoenix earlier in February.
Yeah, if that falls close to the dates
It would be during that period of time. So let's try to do that for July. And when I'm in Australia, I will first be in Perth, which is on the very far west coast, and then I'll be in Sydney and Brisbane and coming up the east coast to what they call the Sunshine Coast, where the Nexus Conference is, July 23rd to the 25th, and it is going to be a fun gathering of people and fascinating subjects. And then I'll be at the MUFON Conference in Irvine, right after getting back.
She's everywhere. All right, good for you. Let's go to final calls. We'll go to Santa Clara, California now. First-time caller, Edward, you're up.
This is Edward. Yeah, speaking of conferences, just heard there's going to be a conspiracy con at Santa Clara Marriott here in Santa Clara.
That's true. Brian Hall is going to be on with us, I think, next week talking about that.
Yeah, one of the things, I'm, of course, in the San Francisco Bay Area. I remember that week, nuclear power plant leak and the smoke coming out, and some of the scientists saying that it's probably going to affect the California coastline. And I remember it was just raining day after day after day when all that stuff was coming over, and I was wondering, could that have affected the oceans with all the rain coming down into the bay? And then you got the cell phone towers. I heard that might have been part of the reason why the honeybees had disappeared, is because all the cell phone towers all over the United States. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you're raising a very interesting question about the weather associated with water and transport of radioactivity from Fukushima across to the West Coast. The problem is we don't have any real ongoing objective radioactivity measurement that is coming to us from any source in the United States. And I don't know. That is an interesting question, but remember, Fukushima didn't happen until after March 11th, and the Pelagic Shark Foundation was already getting reports of sharks washing up in January and February, so that predates Fukushima. It certainly expanded in April and through May for reasons unknown that they're trying to find out. When it comes to the honeybees, there's just no question in my mind anymore that the real problem are the nicotine-based pesticides. And until they are banned, that no one can use them anymore anywhere like France and Germany and Italy are trying to do, I think the United States is going to continue to have terrible problems, because what's happening in the agriculture of the United States is that the Monsanto and the Bayer having genetically modified crops that have systemic pesticides in them are expanding. And there are all kinds of people in farms and agriculture who are afraid now that we have let out a monster, a literal monster, out into the environment, and there is no way to put it back. And if that is, in the end, going to be the truth of what has happened to the pollinators, then for the sake of profit and greed, we allowed this material that even inside EPA's own internal document, a memo that I shared on Coast to Coast 2 or 3 months ago, that in their own internal look at clothianidin, which is another Bayer nicotine-based pesticide, it says right in the EPA internal memo, this will kill honeybee larvae.
Mm-hmm.
And if it is ingested by the adult honeybees on the flowers, that can kill those as well. It's right there. And yet the EPA has registered clothianidin 8 times for Bayer. And you have to stand back from this and say, if the Environmental Protection Agency of the United States were actually devoted to protecting the environment, there never, ever would have been any registration of clothianidin. So what is the goal and the agenda of the agencies of the United States government now? To ally themselves only with money and corporate power? Is that what we have come to? And that the pollinators are dying out, and that so much is going wrong, and the Gulf is suffering, and that corporations are responsible for that disaster as well. The North American Indian would say, you only can go forward in your future with your children when you cherish all life.
That's a good point. Let's go to West Jordan in Utah. Tabura, you're with us. Hi there.
Hi. My question follows what you were just talking about very closely. With all the destruction with the tornadoes and everything recently, I got wondering about all of the mercury from those new spiral light bulbs. And is the EPA going to be able to follow that and see how much mercury is being introduced into the groundwater and what kind of hazard that might pose to the rescue workers and the cleanup crews?
You are asking such a good question. It was only last week in a whole other story I was working on, it came up about the problem with these so-called energy-saving curlicue light bulbs being just a nightmare when it comes to how to discard them without terrible toxicity being added into landfill and every place else. And I don't think that any administration or agency gave one thought, we'll get energy-saving bulbs, and no one went further and said, what's in them, what can poison the land, and what are we going to do about it? And here we have another big disposal problem on our hands in these light bulbs that have the incentive is to use them. We'd be better off using the incandescent bulbs that are not going to be so bad on the environment and paying a few more pennies. So you're raising an excellent issue. I have it on a list. As a matter of fact, I have it on a list to try to get into more deeply and do a report about what the reality check is on what I've heard concerning those bulbs. So hopefully in the future I can do that.
Okay. Thank you, Linda. A couple more minutes to go. Patrick in Cleveland, Ohio. Hey, Patrick. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, good morning to both of you. How are you guys?
Great.
Yeah, Linda, I sent you a fax some months back. I was wondering if you got about mysterious fangs, and if you didn't, I'll give you the quick rundown about what's going on.
Well, sir, I get so much communication from people, you have to give me the subject.
Well, as of February of 2009, late February, March, it had happened both with my mom, both of us and the animals, and then just sometimes with just individuals as well, neither my mom or myself will just hear this. But we live behind train tracks. We live behind an industrial parkway that's no more. So anytime we heard a bang or explosion, if you will, that was always our first place to look. Well, the first time it happened, it was both my mom and I, and one of our animals kind of flipped out. We both wake up, what was that?
Oh, so this is one of those boom explosion sounds.
It sounds as if a really loud firecracker going off. But the strange thing is, what I can't figure out is we didn't mention nobody yet, but there's times where, we'll both hear it, and there's times where just one of us will hear it, and there's times where the animals will hear it. And then there's times where they won't. So I'm wondering if there's some kind of, if that's anything like some kind of, phenomena of some kind, or that's something, UFO related, or what the situation might be. Because it hasn't happened in a few months, but it has happened. I think the last time it happened was maybe 3-4 months ago.
Well, since I started actually going back to New Year's Eve, remember all those booms that were reported in BB, Arkansas, in the Midwest not firecrackers. Everybody was very insistent. And it wasn't just December 31st. It went on for nights before and after.
That's right. And in different regions.
Yes. And I literally have had hundreds of emails from people in various parts of Canada and the United States that have been reporting exactly the same phenomena that you're describing, in which they would have a neighbor and they would actually run to the neighbor and say, "My God, what was that?" And the neighbor is standing there looking at them and doesn't know what they're talking about, raising the issue of why would there be a focused, to the human mind and ear hearing it, a focused loud sound that fills, let's say, a house, rattles windows in a backyard, but the neighbor next door doesn't hear anything. What is this? And recently I got a long involved email from someone who may or may not have some inside information, but the whole bottom line was, consider the fact that if we are dealing with advanced technologies that are not terrestrial, not human, and that whatever they do, going in and out of time, switching dimensions, whatever their mode of transportation ultimately will be learned to be, that there may be something about these booms that go back. The more you study the booms, and I've been trying to read a lot, you're back in the 18th century. You're going back to where people in some of these same places were reporting these bizarre booming sounds. So are we dealing with an advanced technology, or are we dealing with something about this planet and its magnetic fields and the atmosphere that no one has identified before? I don't have an answer yet, but I would sure like to hear from anybody out there. When you hear one of these fresh booms that you know that is highly unusual, please write to me at earthfiles@earthfiles.com and give me the city, the latitude and longitude if you can. And I will try to follow up with some people, because I think this boom phenomena, George, is something substantial. And I don't know if it is increasing or we're just becoming more aware, but so far, I don't have an explanation.
No, it's very strange. And I'm going to send you an email about another story for you to check into, Linda, about the St. Louis Arch, that it might have been made for weather modification. So I'll send you some information. I'll be back in a moment. No, I won't. This is it. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. Boy, did this go by fast. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.